What's up, everybody? It's all pushing 1 o'clock here. Got off work about 4 hours early. Pretty nice. Winter has struck with a vengeance here in West Tennessee. My name is Adam, and this is the Homeward Path Podcast. This is a show by me and MTG Dad for all of you at home who are playing Magic like I am, trying to improve on a limited time and financial budget. This week, we had the Pro Tour. We got our first glimpse at the professional metagame as they said, as they saw it for that weekend. And there's a little bit to unpack there. We're going to start by spotlighting the deck that really seemed to kind of creep up on everybody and surprise the weekend, before diving into the best way to unpack these results in a constructive manner for those of us at home who aren't trying to do what the pros do or do what the grinders are doing. We're just trying to play Magic at home, and we're trying to figure out what the best things to take away from this Pro Tour are. But first, I got to thank the people who make this show possible, who give me this platform. It begins with the network over at constructedcriticism.com. If that's how you're listening to this show and you haven't listened to anybody else on the network, do it. The first episode of Constructed Criticism itself, featuring Seth Manfield and John Stern, just went up, by the time this uploads, I think 2 days ago. I can't remember for sure. But it just went up this week. It's a shift in tone for sure compared to Michael and Matt, but it's still engaging. It's just a different look at Magic at the professional level. It's two professionals who are very, 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 very good at Magic. I can't say very enough times to describe them, that are trying to give back by, you know, lending some of their skills, maybe some of their mindset to those of us at home. So I can't recommend that highly enough. Other shows on the network, we have Even Odds, which is the PTQ Grinders podcast with Mason and Trey. And I recommend that as well. The banter between Mason and Trey, and Mason and basically anybody, is just worth the listen anyway. And then, I mean, it's just good content. It's kind of a nice look into the life of the grinder. And then we have Common Knowledge, which is probably going to get a little bit of a shot in the arm with the recent announcement on Magic Online that you can actually qualify for the Pro Tour via Pauper in the future. That's really exciting, especially for those two, Brandon and Sean. I can't recommend these shows highly enough. I got to get caught up this weekend while I'm stuck inside trying to stay out of the cold. But you know who won't leave you out in the cold is our sponsor over at inkgaming.com. That you use our promo code CCMTG10 at checkout, they'll give you 10% off your order, and you'll be sitting in the house in style, or sitting in the game shop in style. So check them out. Do yourself that favor. If you want to support the show directly, you can do so at patreon.com/homewardpathmtg. We are currently up to $13 on the Patreon goal between now and February to help cover the entry fee for Grand Prix Memphis. So that's exciting. Progress is being made. If you would like to donate, please feel free to do so. I mean, that's really all there is to say. There will never be any desire to make this show paid. And I personally, right now, I don't know what I want to do for Patreon exclusive content. I haven't really gotten that far, but I'm sure it'll get there. With that all out of the way, we're going to move on to our first segment each week, which is Deck Spotlight. Each week, I like to take a look at a deck, just a single deck, and kind of break it down to its core concept, you know, what it is that this deck is trying to do, and how you can attack both with it and against it. And this week's is going to be White Weenie in Standard. It was the deck that took the Pro Tour by storm. It was 6 out of the top 8 slots. That's the hyperbolic reaction to it. The deck is just ridiculous. It took 6 out of top 8 slots. Let's tamper that down a little bit. We'll get to why later, but the deck is exciting. It's exciting to see this style of deck be viable in Standard again after so long with, you know, mono red between Rampaging Ferocidon keeping it down, Goblin Chain Whirler keeping it down. I mean, it's just refreshing to see the wide white creature deck be really good again. So for those who have not played in a Standard format where one of these was viable, this is a deck that is the lowest to the ground you can pretty much possibly be without going into Eternal formats. This is a deck that's playing 20 one-drop proactive plays. 20, most of them anyway. 21 drops. That executes a lot of explosive turns, if you are not aware. You know, if the Red Dax last year had had 21 drops, it would have been even more dominant. If they had 21 drops they wanted to play, they would have been even more dominant. So, you know, bear that in mind. This white deck is intriguing, though, because of the propensity to splash. But it all starts with these one drops. Cards like Sky Marcher, Aspirant, cards like Dauntless Bodyguard give you a reasonable return on your initial one mana investment. Legion's Landing represents both an initial kind of, you know, 1/1 lifelink for ones, not particularly exciting, but it does a thing, it does a job. And it also contributes well to City's Blessing on Sky Marcher, Aspirant, or another card we'll get to here in a little while. But, you know, getting two permanents out of one card for one mana is pretty strong for this deck in particular. And the flipped form of Legion's Landing gives you a little bit of inevitability, kind of like a Keldoran Outpost, for those of you who've been playing forever. It's like an upgraded Keldoran Outpost. So, I mean, the core concept is you play out a bunch of these one-drop creatures and you get to attacking your opponent. And you get paid off for this commitment to staying low to the ground with cards like Benelish Marshal, Pride of Conquerors, History of Benalia, you know, if you're staying mono-white, or once you start branching into other colors, if you're going into red, you get cards like Heroic Reinforcements, the Mentor creatures between Aurelia, maybe Legion War Boss, maybe, you know, some number of those. Tajik, I mean, there's a list of cards that are good in the red splash, and a big part of the reason why that was the most popular splash, but I've even seen some variations of it that are splashing green for a little bit of a stronger late game with cards like Chalet, Voice of Plenty, to give you a mana sink as the game goes along. You can just keep pumping your creatures up turn after turn after turn and just get a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger as things go on. The other big payoff in green is Tristani Discordant, who adds to your forces, adds a fat butt to the board, and pumps the rest of your team as well. But all the way around, that's the long and short of the deck. You don't have a lot of room for interaction, so you play really, really non-conditional removal in cards like Conclave Tribunal. You are much more interested in cards that advance your board state than you are on cards that take away from your opponents. And what you are trying to do is use your early turns to force your opponents to interact, and you want to maintain enough of a board state that you can get to one of your big swing turns on turn 5 or 6 and be able to just pump your team for lethal. That's really the gist of it. Whether it's by creating this big army with heroic reinforcements and swinging in a ton of extra damage, whether it's by waiting for History of Benalia's Chapter 3 to go off with a board that features Dauntless Bodyguard, Benelish Marshal, Knight of Grace, and the tokens created by the history, you know, that's a lot of damage. But by and large, you just want to create a handful of big swing turns where you can just threaten to kill your opponent in one fell swoop. And up to and after that point, if it's unsuccessful, you're just chipping in for as much damage as you can get. It's a deck that does not win outside the red zone. It does not have the kind of reach that red deck does with Experimental Frenzy and Burn. You don't have that plan. If you get Stonewalled, you can't just rely on Frenzy drawing you enough burn to kill your opponent. Your Frenzy is going to rebuild your board if you're playing the red splash. Maybe it'll draw you a Banefire, but it's not going to... It's not going to catch you all the way back up and kill your opponent. So as for, you know, how to attack the format with this deck, I think all you got to do is look at what happened at the Pro Tour. The matchups where opponents are playing a lot of spot removal are where you shine, because you can overload spot removal very quickly and force your opponents onto the back foot where they can't develop any kind of a plan of their own. They can't take a turn off to do something. They constantly have to interact with you in order to save their face. And then even in your tougher matchups against cards like Deafening Clarion or Cleansing Nova, Dauntless Bodyguard, Adanto Vanguard, and the progressive inevitability of cards like History of Benalia and a flipped Legion's Landing still represent a little bit of play in those matchups where maybe otherwise, historically, you would not have a good time. So I feel like it's a deck that's got some staying power. I'm not going to say it's just flash in the pan, only good for 1 week. But I feel like it's a deck that's got some staying power. It's obviously got the strength to contend. And if you're trying to build a deck today, trying to build a brew today, you can't ignore the White Menace. As far as attacking it, I would look at black removal looks really strong right now. Cards like Moment of Craving and Golden Demise don't care how many Dauntless Bodyguards or Adanto Vanguards they have. Doing a better job of leveraging your sweepers, playing more sweepers. For example, Jeskai going back to more copies of Settle the Wreckage would be really good here. It's a deck that you can definitely beat if you really want to. Again, especially if the Red Splash becomes more popular and Tajik becomes one of the kind of the default cards in the list in the 75 for the White Weenie, you definitely want board wipes that don't deal damage so that you don't have to worry about Tajik. At least that's where my mind is. It is what it is. The deck won the Pro Tour. It was in the top two slots. And we'll get to why maybe that's a little bit of an oversimplification now. So the Pro Tour this past weekend was really exciting. It was some of the most fun I've had watching a standard Pro Tour in a very long time. A high-level standard event in a very long time, if I'm being honest. But it's important not to take the results too heavily based on what was there at the top. Because, again, we had 6 out of the top 8 slots were White Weenie variants. There's a lot to like about the way the standard format looked going into the event. There was no deck with more than a 20% representation on day 1 or day 2. If it was, it was like 22, 23. It was nothing anywhere approaching Red Black Chain Whirler or Teamer Energy numbers. So that was really encouraging. But more than that, we also just finally got to see some archetypes that maybe we haven't seen in the last couple of years. Control is more of a tap-out deck now because you don't have to worry about just dying to a Hazoret if you tap out for a thing. The weird decks, like the Lich's Mastery deck, even though it didn't do well, it was good to see it there. There's so much about this standard format that's really exciting, and if you look past just specifically what did well, you really start to see the intrigue of this format. Because more important to understand than what did well, which there were plenty of decks, there was Green Black, White Weenie, Jeskai, Is It Drake, Mono Red. There's a lot of decks that put up some numbers at this Pro Tour. But more important than what did well is why they did well. And why these decks did well is largely a function of two things. One is the reason these decks were constructed. They were constructed for different reasons. First of all, this is a split format tournament. So we had 6 rounds of limited and 10 rounds of constructed. But the limited rounds came first. So if you built your deck expecting a lot of White Weenie, but then you go 1-2 in your draft, you may not see any White Weenie. And that's what happened to Seth and John. They both felt like they had reasonable White Weenie matchups and just never played against it all weekend. More than that, you look at like the Channel Fireball team. LSV sent a tweet out this weekend that said they were something like an absurd 80% win rate in limited. So, and they were only like 44% in constructed, with LSV being the obvious outlier on his team because he was in the final. But that does, as good as their deck was, it maybe wasn't necessarily as good as the numbers in the top 8 would suggest. They were just, they did really, really well in limited and did just enough in constructed to get there. So that's one thing to take into account when you're looking at these decks that made the top eight. You know, always look past the top eight. Look down the rest of the decks, because they publish the decks now that had a 6-4 finish or better. So that means decks that did better than breaking even. And you can go through a lot of them and just kind of try to understand what it was they were trying to attack. The next reason these decks tend, you've got to take into account why they did well, is deck building trends leading into the Pro Tour. If you want to gain an edge in a format, there's a couple of things you can do. You can try to brew something new that nobody's ever seen before, like Team Fireball tried to do with the blue-green Karn deck. Or you can do what they did this time around, where they say, you look at all these black-green lists and you don't see a lot of Golden Demises. You don't see board wipes of any kind, really, except for the back half of Finality. You don't see, they don't have the ability to catch all the way up before it's too late. Maybe we should just play a bunch of small white creatures. That seems good. Let's do that. And it creates this situation where you've got a deck that's really well positioned against not only, it's not just that it's a good deck and you've got a good, clean, efficient mana curve, a good, you know, everything you want out of a good competitive deck, but they've also got a little bit of a hole in the format they can exploit. So that's something else to take into consideration as to why these decks are performing the way they are. And then last, the last big reason you have to take into account why decks did well. These decks are not designed to be the best decks in the format forever. They're designed to be the best deck that weekend for that tournament. And I've seen that happen a couple of times at the Pro Tours in the past. My first Pro Tour was won by one such deck. Heezy Street Gruul, as piloted by Mark Herberholz, was very much a metagame deck for what he expected at that Pro Tour. And the results bore that out as the season wore on afterward, because Gruul ended up being a completely different configuration by the end of the season than what Herberholz kicked into motion. That didn't stop people from copying his list card for card and trying to jam it. They just had a really bad time thereafter because the format adapted to it pretty quickly. It's going to do the same thing to White Weenie. Another good example is the Patrick Chapin, Gabriel Nassif Mono Red Dragonstorm, where they actually properly broke standard for 3 days at Worlds in 2007. So, I mean, it's just, it's a weird thing that happens when you look at the Pro Tour results and decide that the numbers you see at this tournament are what the format's going to look like forever. It's not. You know, another classic example of a deck that won a Pro Tour falling completely off the face of the earth. Can anybody tell me what won Pro Tour Kaladesh? Because I honestly can't remember. It wasn't any of the three decks that came to dominate that format shortly thereafter. The deck, I honestly, it was some kind of weird control deck. That's all I remember. The person who won that Pro Tour did not recommend playing his deck after that Pro Tour. So, you know, if you're interested, especially like I am, in playing a deck with some staying power, you maybe don't need to move off what you have. And that brings me to the next point as to what to do with the information you gather, which is make decisions on how to tune the decks you're already playing. And if you can't tune them appropriately, then consider moving. Then consider shifting to something else. But I cannot recommend seeing the results from this weekend and deciding to get out of Jeskai control and onto White Weenie. You can tune Jeskai to beat White Weenie if you want to. You know, you can tune green-black to have a better White Weenie matchup. It's not impossible. You know, there's a lot of lines you can take in this standard format. It is by no means solved yet. So take advantage, do some research, find some cards that fill roles you need, try it out, and then worry about trying to flip. Because if you're like me, we're in this for the long haul anyway. We're not in this for a 1-week advantage. So maximize the resources you have at your disposal before you start trying to change them out completely. As for me, I'm going to be trying out some cards in green black, and I'm experimenting a little bit with a black splash in the tempo deck. There's a little bit of stuff to play around with there. I'm gonna see what I can come up with. So that's going to bring it to the end of the episode, gang. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to reach out and get in touch with the show, you can do so by sending me stuff on Twitter. I'm at HomewardPathMTG. I try to respond as often as I can. I do the same on Facebook. My name is Adam Spain. You can either add friend request or even just send me a message. As Brandon Wheeler can attest, I will talk to you. I may talk to you to excess. May happen. But I will enjoy every minute of it. So, and if you want to join the conversation in mass, you can do so on any of the Facebook groups. Sorry, my voice is a little bit weird because of weather. But, you know, I said you can do so on either of the Facebook groups. You can join the Homeward Pathfinders or the Constructive Criticism family. The first one is for the show. The second one is for the network. You can also get involved with the lovely dad humor that we get at the end of every episode by tweeting your best MTG dad jokes with the hashtag MTG dad jokes. It's as self-explanatory as it seems. It's fun. It's exciting. And I love it. And we had one submission this week, and it was a doozy. It was in one of the Facebook groups. I believe where are you? Trying to pull it up now. It was in the Constructed Criticism family. It says, a little magic, a lot of D&D, all bad dad joke. And it says, why does nobody trust the low dex wizard? Because he can trip at any moment. Cantrip at any moment. Anyway, I love it. I love it. I laughed. Anyway, thanks again, everybody, for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any suggestions, comments, concerns, want to tell me everything I've gotten wrong over the course of this episode, please feel free to do so on any of the outlets I just described. Again, if you feel like you are getting enough back out of this show, you want to contribute, you can do so on the Patreon page, Homeward Path MTG. And I will catch you in 2 weeks. I will not be doing an episode next week for Thanksgiving. I will be taking that week off. I will be spending it with my family. We are going on vacation because I have 5 days off from work and so does Sarah. So I will catch you in 2 weeks. So keep the feedback coming. Keep the conversation going. And I will share some more with you then. Peace.